11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to still 5 seconds left in the game.
Over.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
The classic call by Al Michaels, 1980. The miracle on ice in Lake Placid, New York, the U.S. Olympic hockey team winning the gold medal after that game against the Russians. I spent some time with Jim Craig, who was the goalie of that team, at some golf tournaments back on the Cape. And he didn't think it was a miracle. He just said that we were just a bunch of guys who did what we needed to do, and we ended up winning the game. That was the way he looked at it. It wasn't a miracle. It's like Sully Sullenberger, the miracle on the Hudson. Was it a miracle? No. That was a pilot who had a lot of training and the set skills to come through in the clutch. But what is it about people that manage to come through in the clutch as to others who fold when they're faced with these types of difficult and stressful situations? The book is called Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. The author is our guest, Paul Sullivan, a self-professed lifelong choker. Mr. Sullivan, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jerry. But, you know, in defense, all of that is true. I say that in the book, but you mentioned the miracle on ice. And a couple years back ago in a golf tournament in New York, I won $40 off of Mike Arruzioni. So it was,
oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. It was closest to the pin contest, and I was closer than him. So in that moment, I came through.
Just one disclaimer, folks. Mr. Arruzioni was playing with a hockey stick. Mr. Sullivan had a six iron. So I'm glad you got his money.
That part.
So when you look at that miracle, I mean, I understand that I think it does a disservice to miracles, you know, however people define what they are or what they've been. But, you know, these are things that we look at in miraculous aspects. Sully Sullenberger putting that plane down on the Hudson. And in a certain way, I guess you search out that miracle aspect, but this is a guy who spent a lot of hours behind the stick. This is a guy who spent a lot of time in the simulator. This is a guy whose life had gotten him ready for that moment, much like the guys on the hockey team. You know, it was guys who practiced hard, worked hard, and decided that we're going to go out there and we're going to win this game. Miracle aside, coming through in the clutch, some people do, a lot of people don't.
Yeah, and, you know, I make the point, you know, at the outset of my book that, you know, clutch is not luck. Clutch is the ability to do what you can do under normal circumstances, under pressure. I mean, that 1980 U.S. hockey team, they were great, and they just stuck to it. I mean, they were focused, they were disciplined, they adapted in that game. They were clutch. You know, Sully Sullenberger, I mean, as we all know, he had a tremendous amount of glider training when he was in the Air Force. So he had, you know, the ability to do that. Where I come down and make the argument is, you know, clutch is not the home run that wins the game. It's not the free throw or the three-point shot at the buzzer. I mean, that has an element of luck to it. But, you know, if you look at, you know, some great football players, you know, you mentioned the Boston connection. You know, Tom Brady in his prime was fantastic at this. He would just, you know, play after play after play, eat away yards on the field, and that's what he could do. He wasn't relying on, you know, however much I love Doug Flutie in his prime, he wasn't relying on a Hail Mary pass. Tom Brady
right.
was just working the ball down the field.
And then ruined by a couple of supermodels. Point of the story, guys, stick to what you're good at.
I don't think anybody feels sorry for him.
No, not really. Over the weekend, Jim Furyk, clutch. Not a miracle. He has a par 3 on the 18th. He's got an $11 million hole in front of him. If he wins, he gets that tournament championship, plus he gets the FedEx Cup, $11 million total. Tee shot into the bunker, walks up, doesn't spend a lot of time, hits out of the bunker, 2.5 feet from the cup, taps in, gets his par, gets $11 million. That's clutch. Now, that's a guy coming through, and he knew when he got in that sand trap. He said, if I spend too much time here, I'm going to pooch it, and if I spend too much time on the green, I'm going to get the yips. So this is a guy that used his muscle memory to come through in the clutch.
Yeah, I would have shanked the ball across the green if I was in the trap. But, you know, I have one of the last chapter of my book looked at two golfers and their coach. One is Jeff Ogilvie, who won the U.S. Open in 2006, And their coach is a fantastic guy named Dale Lynch. And, you know, what he talked about to me is exactly what somebody like Jim Furyk did on Sunday. And essentially, when you're at that level, if you just look at it as another shot, not as, oh, God, I hit it into the bunker, now I got to hit it out. It's just another shot. Jim Furyk had hit a sand shot like that, you know, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of times. He knew he could do it. The putt, same thing. It's when you start thinking this is, you know, the shot for $11 million that you're no longer focused. You're no longer, you know, present and in the moment, and that's when bad things happen. And, of course, that's the difference between, you know, Jim Furyk and the rest of us.
Right. Now, you are a self-professed lifelong choker. Now, in the book, we see what people have done, whether it's in time of war, pitching in a World Series, trading on Wall Street, that people develop these set skills that allow them to have what's necessary to come through in the clutch. Can you take someone like you, who's a self-professed lifelong choker, with not in what you're doing as a writer and as the Wealth Matters columnist for the New York Times, or even when you wrote for the Financial Times, can someone who historically is a choker take what they can learn in the book and adapt it to becoming one of those people who comes through in the clutch?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the two and a half years it took me to write this book, it changed a lot from wanting to, you know, just look at people who are great under pressure and people who are awful under pressure, to really kind of breaking it down into the five traits that I think anybody can apply, be you a businessman, a professional golfer, or, you know, a recreational golfer, or a stay-at-home mom. I mean, we all face pressure, and these traits are very clear. You know, the five traits are focus, discipline, adaptability, being present, and what I call the push and pull of fear and desire. I mean, as for me, you keep reminding me I'm a lifelong choker. That's a horrendous thing to do. But in the course of writing this book, I talked about in the beginning of the book, you know, very specifically on the golf course. You know, I played with my friends as a kid, played with my grandfather, you know, had a single-digit handicap, but I'd go into a tournament and I'd invariably shoot an 85 or a 90. But, you know, one of the golfers I talked to, Jeff Ogilvy, in the course of talking with him and spending time with him, you know, it became very clear to me that I wasn't choking so much as I didn't have the skills that I thought I had. You know, I couldn't
right.
do the things under normal conditions, and then I expected to really come through in a tournament. And I think that affects a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people, be it golf, be it tennis, you know, any of the recreational sports we do, we put too much pressure on ourselves, and we expect to make the shot like Jim Furyk did on Sunday. But, you know, I think people need to ask themselves, can you do that under normal circumstances? I mean, the good news for me in golf, I now, after writing this book, play just as well or just as badly when I'm out with my friends as I do in a tournament, or as I do when somebody invites me to a nice country club. I've gotten to the point where I can manage that. And if I can do it, I'm pretty sure most of your listeners can do it as well.
Paul Sullivan's with us. The book is Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. Amazon, all major book retailers. We link to it at the homepage, jerrydoyle.com. The fifth item that you brought up, fear and desire. Overcoming fear with desire, but a lot of people, unfortunately, feed into that fear mentality and almost set themselves up for the worst-case scenario. You know, I'm going to pooch this. I'm not going to... And in a certain way, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that if they play into that fear, then fear sets them up for failure, but they already set themselves up to fail, so it's not as unsettling, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And it plays in, you know, the three traits of people who choke are not accepting responsibility for what's going on, being overconfident and overthinking. And the way you framed it there, it really comes into overthinking. I talk about a couple well-known baseball players in the book and how they prepared. And, you know, the one who is the hero, David Price, the pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, I mean, he doesn't overthink. He's just there, and he's going out, and he's pitching. What I think the scenario you set up is that fear, people are thinking, okay, you know, I failed many times in the past, and now I'm going to come through. And that almost puts too much of a burden on us. I mean, it's the same thing with getting up and giving a presentation at work or a speech at some function. If if you just get up there and do it, knowing that you're the expert and knowing that you know as much as anybody on the subject, you're going to go do fine. When you start, you know, having that fear, when you start to worry and you start to overthink and you start thinking, oh boy, you know, last time I really flubbed this, or you know, there's my wife in the audience, what is she going to think? Then it's all downhill.
Right, and that whole thing about, oh, you're going to speak in front of a group, just imagine your audience is naked. No, I'd want to run out of the room. I wouldn't. It's not my, exactly. It's not my motivating factor. But I think one of the keys, too, in the 5 points that you have in the book, Clutch, is focus. And I think a lot of people kind of just ease into situations, whether it's a situation of a sports scenario, or it's giving a speech, or it's a presentation at your job, or whatever, you know, dynamic is playing out, that you need to go into it and you need to almost role play with yourself, and you have to have laser-like focus that this is what I have to do, this is where it's going to happen, this is how it's going to happen. And then you also, with you have adaptability in there, is that you have to play out scenarios. What if the mic doesn't work? What if the lights go out? What if, what if, what if? And prepare yourself for just about every possible scenario so that when something happens that might cause you to choke, you can come through in the clutch.
Yeah, I mean, you made a great point there, you know, talking about focus as laser-like focus, and that's exactly how I think about it. I mean, focus frames everything you're going to do under pressure, and a lot of listeners may be thinking, well, I can focus, but oftentimes we confuse focus with concentration, and so if focus is a laser, concentration is a flashlight. You know, you're almost there, but you're not quite. You know, concentration is how you're going to drive your car home tonight. You know, focus is borrowing your buddy's sports car and driving it at 150 miles an hour on a racetrack. They're very different. They seem similar, but they're very different. And that focus puts you in the right frame of mind. As for adaptability, again, you're completely right. I mean, we have these great plans. We spend a lot of time laboring over them. We think this is how it's going to be, but you know, we have to know that forces, you know, unforeseen to us can ruin those plans. And one of the examples I use in the book is a Secret Service agent who was protecting Bill Clinton in the 92 campaign. And the Secret Service, they plan for nothing to ever happen. That's their goal. They do all this advanced work so the event comes off without a hitch. Well, that didn't happen in this event in Southern California, and somebody grabbed Clinton, pulled him into the crowd, and it was his Secret Service agent's job to fix that. What he did was he immediately broke the guy's hand, and he pushed Clinton into an SUV with, you know, two other agents behind him, and, you know, the 4, 5, and 6 agents jumped on the ground. And when I asked him, you know, what happened to the guy, he looked at me and he said, you know, that wasn't, it didn't matter. That wasn't part of the plan. My plan, I adapted. I had to get Clinton out of there. The other agent took care of it. I mean, that's an extreme example, but it shows how quickly at that level, if something is going to scupper your plan, how quickly a Secret Service agent adapts, because the ultimate goal is to keep the president or whoever they're protecting safe.
Yeah, people don't plan to fail. They fail to plan. Instead of on a presidential level, let me take it down to a street level. A buddy of mine, house on Peggotty Beach in Scituate Harbor, he said, I got to change things up. I'm getting stale in my marriage. I'm getting stale as a dad. He said, I'm coming. I'm leaving the office early today. I'm going home. He had 3 kids. Nice place right out on the water. And he said, when I go through that door, I'm the new dad. I'm the new guy. I'm changing it up. Today, it's a different day going forward. And he busts through the front door and he says, hey, kids, your favorite dad's home. And the one kid looked at him and said, you're our only dad. And he couldn't adapt. He was crestfallen. He was crushed. And he just walked out onto the beach. He said, I wanted to drown myself, because he didn't have what-if scenarios if he got mocked by his own kid.
That's a great story. And, you know, I've heard a million stories of people, you know, men, and how they're going to propose to their soon-to-be wife. And so many of them concoct these elaborate scenarios. We're going to go off on a hot air balloon, or we're going to, you know, a marching band is going to come through. And I think that sounds fantastic, but what happens if something goes wrong? I mean, there are too many moving parts to that. The only thing that matters is you say, will you marry me? And she says yes, and that's it. You know, then cue the marching band afterwards.
Yeah, plan on perhaps the balloon might catch fire or, God forbid, crash. These are all things that you have to plan out so that you can come through in the clutch. I wish we had more time to spend. Paul Sullivan, it's a great book. Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. Amazon.com, all major book retailers, and we link to it at jerrydoyle.com. Thanks for your time, sir.
Great, Jerry. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
The Jerry Doyle Show.
I'm laughing about the proposal of marriage. Mine went horribly wrong. Thanks to customs in old Canada, I was miserable because I didn't have contingency plans. I choked. I didn't come through in the clutch. Stick with me.
The Jerry Doyle Show.